Welcome to The Podyssey, the podcast that takes you behind the scenes of the greatest little independent cinema on the planet, The Odyssey in St Albans. This podcast is a partnership between The Odyssey Cinema and Mix 92.6 FM, Hertfordshire's local radio station. Thanks for joining us. Hello and welcome to the January edition of The Podyssey. I hope you have a lovely Christmas. If you're listening at home, I hope you enjoyed our Christmas episode. It's still on there on all your Spotify streaming channels to have a listen to. I'm here as always with Nick, Roberto and Sam. Hello, chaps. I know that The Odyssey was very busy over Christmas. What have you guys been doing just over Christmas at The Odyssey?
Just showed a lot of the classics, really. Had a lot of our kind of annual family-friendly films on, like Home Alone. And Neil, of course, you came to see Polar Express at the pyjama party.
I did. And I was very impressed by the amount of hot chocolate turned out by you guys. The sheer volume of it was incredible. And you got a little hot behind there.
It was pretty warm, yeah. And yeah, a shocking amount of hot chocolate, really. I mean, it was great. Yeah, very fitting for the film as well.
And I have that thing where, you know, when Christmas ends, it's kind of a bit melancholy. You're glad to be back at it, but you sort of miss Christmas. I now look back on days like that through really rose-coloured glasses. That feels like a really lovely pre-Christmas thing that me and Freddie did. So, yeah, it was good, that. It was really good. So we're going to talk a bit about the stuff coming up in 2025. Of course we are. But first of all, I just wanted to touch on the Golden Globes. The Golden Globes happened since we last spoke. Some winners in there, bit of controversy maybe. I tell you what, Nick, we'll go to you first. Any views on the Golden Globes and the winners and what went on there?
The winners, I mean, I never really looked at the bookies. I usually do, but you really couldn't predict it. I mean, maybe a couple in there. So like The Brutalist, big epic movie. And I know you mentioned recently about also just like the views changing on sort of cinema as well, just generally, and what like chances there to like make a, like award-winning movies, basically. So like what connotates sort of a winning award-winning movie, and how maybe the viewing, according to like these academia, you know, these big companies that are getting like getting awarding these brand new movies. But I mean, I like, so Emilia Perez, best film, musical or comedy, best non-English language movie as well that I'm looking at. That's a streaming movie, you know, that's a Netflix movie. Unfortunately, I don't think we'll have the chance to show that at The Odyssey, which is really sad as well. I mean, because there is something to sort of look out for in that, is like they do have really strong female roles and characters. But then there's also a socio-political stance in the movie as well, because it does bring up themes of trans identity, sexual orientation as well, which is important to look at, you know, in today's world. But also, some people don't really want that in their movies, you know. And I was a fan of the film itself, but considering, you know, also we're looking at performances that Golden Globe winning actress now Demi Moore. And just sort of the side, funny to find out that this is her first acting award ever for The Substance, which is crazy.
Also, I was going to say, yeah, I was really surprised when she kind of said that in her speech. I thought what she said, it is interesting how, I don't know if the director of The Substance kind of sought out Demi Moore specifically for the role, like because of perhaps her own career mirrored that of the character she wrote, but from Demi Moore's speech, it really seemed like she kind of felt very strongly about what The Substance was commenting on in terms of how women are treated in this industry. And kind of hearing her speak about that really kind of showed how much she not only cared about the role and the film, but kind of elucidates why her performance was so good in it. That was kind of the main thing I saw from the Golden Globes, was that Demi Moore won. And The Substance was one of my favorite films.
Explain a bit about what The Substance is.
So essentially I think most people will go straight for horror. I would say horror comedy is the right term. And like, I think some would say maybe the comedy is like lesser, but I think it's very much, there's a lot of satire in there, very overt satire about an actress who essentially, an AG actress who is let go of her kind of her main gig at this television company, and as a result takes this thing called The Substance, which essentially gives birth to a new version of her played by Margaret Qualley. And that is how essentially she kind of tries to get herself back into the acting industry, with chaotic and grotesque results, to say the least. I know Sam and Nick have seen it. I think you guys were on the same page in terms of liking it as much as I did.
Oh yeah, I loved it. It's definitely in my top three of last year. Probably in contention for number one. It's a really terrific film. It's pretty as you say, very grotesque and quite extreme. I was talking to a customer actually last night who'd just seen Heretic, who asked me if The Substance was as gory as Heretic. And I had to say, I think it's leaps and bounds ahead in terms of gore and everything, really. Everything possible is in The Substance. You kind of just got to see it to believe it, really. It's very extreme, but the extremity is kind of the point that it's trying to make as well. So it's very clever, and it's not just absurd for the sake of being absurd, I think.
So one of the things I wanted to mention on the list, chaps, is The Brutalist. Now, The Brutalist, as I understand it, is about 3 hours long. That, to me, seems a little bit too long for a film. I think it looks, candidly, dare I say, a slightly boring film as well. I know it's a criminal thing to say, but what are our views on A, The Brutalist, and B, the length of that film?
Covering the length of the running time first, like, just brutally honest, like, I know a lot of people's tastes are different to sort of the mainstream way of it, but it has got a worldwide distribution now, and I think it's under A24 as well, and they're very much known for, like, taking out their films and putting it into mainstream. So, you know, look at it won the best film Oscar, which is Everything Everywhere All at Once, and that was an A24 movie. But the length of the movie, I think there's, like, Bollywood movies released every week which are like 4 hours long, so that's just exists. Interval makes it a good sort of thing there, where you can relax in that time and recollect, and also a decision to possibly not watch the rest of the movie, and you can leave after that. Ultimately, I think the movie, if it's critically acclaimed, you know, generally most people will try and catch that then, and, you know, try to watch it at least. But regarding the film itself, I know that it has a sort of premise of, essentially, it's a film with following the American immigrant experience. Adrian Brody plays a guy who leaves sort of like a war-torn country, I believe, and then heads off into America, where he sort of becomes the man that he was in his home country, which is like an architect, I believe. That's what I get from the trailer. And then from then on, I believe it's sort of slices of his life up to his death, I think. So it's relatively sort of unknown unless you really looked into it. But I will watch it. You know, I like spending my time in the cinema. So it feels like a one-off movie, doesn't it? Like, you watch it once. I've seen it. Would you tell other people to watch it? Sure.
I think that's the thing about a long film that is also that if a film that is of quite a long length is really powerful, it's not necessarily, you know, you're definitely not going to be watching it like as much as you pop on like what you like your favorite film, but it might be an experience that lasts with you for like a long time and just kind of gives you a new perspective. I think every year there's always a film that kind of, you know, is a bit longer, and go and see it kind of means like putting a risk in it. You know, you might not enjoy it, but if it is really good, it kind of really stays with you. So I think I will be going to watch it, especially if it is getting all the acclaim it's getting. I think I will go in as blind as possible, just to like get as absorbed as possible. Just like, okay, what is this? How will it wrap me in? What will it do to me? Will I be damaged afterwards? Who knows?
Yeah. So I saw that Ralph Fiennes won something for Conclave. That looks good. I know you guys are showing Conclave. What do you think of it, Sam?
Yeah, it's good. It's pretty suspense
suspenseful, intense. My mom actually came to see it yesterday again. She's already seen it once with me, so she really loved it. Yeah, it's just a really good story. It's been well told. It's pretty controlled narrative, and it's got lots of really good twists in there. It's kind of just a great thriller.
This is the one where Ray finds and several other people are cardinals, and they're trying to pick the new pope, and there's kind of skullduggery and scheming and politics and all of that kind of stuff. This is based on like a classic kind of Robert Harris novel, I think. I definitely want to catch that one. And the only other thing I was going to mention is that I'm quite looking forward to Kieran Culkin won Best Supporting Actor for A Real Pain. This is the Jesse Eisenberg one, which sounds very good. Anyone know anything about that one?
Yep, I saw it. So when I went away to New York like 2 months ago, I got to see it there, and I specifically teamed up because I was like, well, it's not in the UK. I know it's out in the UK in January, so I was like, well, I'll go watch it like early. And it's great. It's a really good movie. It's like a road buddy comedy movie, but with a bit of sort of dark, twisted sense of humor in there as well, because it's about two cousins that go to their sort of grandma's hometown of Poland, or like to the country of Poland, and to go back and essentially do a bit of like a Mecca trip. So they go back to Auschwitz to sort of, you know, think and relay and pray on the sort of, I don't know, the emotional journey that they had, that they their forefathers and their, you know, all those sorts of things, like, you know, and just sort of go through it together. But it is besides that sort of emotional turmoil, it is a very funny movie, and the acting is great. The writing is great. The cinematography as well. Technically it looks stunning, like really colorful and just beautiful shots. And it sort of a thing in Conclave. It's got a very controlled sort of spatial narrative, like, you know, you're just really on that journey with them to Auschwitz and then back to the airport where it starts from. So it's very much just like a full circle moment of the film as well. And yeah, just really beautifully told. I just want to say quickly, I had the most obnoxious man in my cinema. There's like three of us at 10 p.m. screening off of Times Square, and this guy was laughing like, ah! Like every moment that he could. And he was like, me. He was like 2 rows in front of me. I'm like, really? Like 3 people here and you're still going to be that way? So in that way, I think I might have to watch it again just so I get over that.
I'm quite interested to see Kieran Culkin in that, because he's obviously the kind of fast-talking guy from Succession. I've not seen him in any films. I know he's Macaulay's brother, but I'm quite interested to see him do his thing in films. He's almost like, you know, that kind of wisecracking kind of Billy Crystal type thing. He's almost got that going on. So I'll be quite interested to see what he does.
Yeah, the only thing I'd really seen Kieran Culkin in before he kind of became big off Succession, I guess, is Scott Pilgrim versus the World, where he played Wallace, which is an absolutely iconic role. And he's got that like X factor of comedy. There's like a part where he just says, Scott says something about, oh, this person's done this, and he goes, well, it probably just means he's better than you. This is perfect. I watched it again on New Year's Eve, actually. Oh, he's brilliant. So I was happy you won just on your goodwill alone, but I can't wait to see A Real Pain. It looks right up my alley in terms of what I look for in like a kind of comedy drama. So yeah, I'm definitely looking forward to that.
Okay, so that was the Golden Globe. We'll come back after a quick break and we'll chat about what you guys are looking forward to in 2025. Welcome back to part 2 of the Podyssey. Sorry if you've been experiencing a couple of sound quality issues, or if it sounds a bit different to normal, a little bit jumpy. We're recording today's episode online for various reasons. We're normally in the studio, today we're online, and we're having a few gremlins in the works, but we are bravely cracking on through it. But apologies if it sounds a bit different to normal. So, chaps, 2025, unbelievably is upon us. It sounds like a year from the future, but we are just in it now. So what are we looking forward to in 2025? Sam, let's start with you.
All right. Yes, I've got a top five anticipated films coming up this year. I think it's going to be a great year for film. It seems to be. Yeah, we're kind of seeing the backlog of a lot of films that probably would have come out last year, this year because of the strikes a few years ago. So we've been getting a lot of big tentpole films, as well as some great independent films as well. Number five on my list, tentatively, is the new Superman from James Gunn. It's the start of a new DC universe and the whole reboot of the character. Yes, so I'm really, really hoping it's going to be good. So I'm a big DC fan. And I've been waiting a long time for a good or a great new DC film. So David Corenswet is the new Superman. He's a fairly unknown actor, I think. This is his first starring role in a major film. I remember when he was cast, there was a lot of backlash because people said that he was far too skinny and pretty. But of course, it took, you know, a couple of months and then he became the biggest man on the planet. So I think in that respect, he's totally fine. And yeah, sure, he's going to be great. They must have seen something incredible in him to cast him in the role. And Rachel Brosnahan is Lois Lane, and she played Miss Maisel on the Amazon Prime show. And she's absolutely terrific. She's really funny. So I think she's going to be great. So really hoping that's going to be good. That's coming in, I think, late June, July this year. And then number four, I've got The Running Man, which is it's not a remake of the 87 film. It's actually purely an adaptation of the book. So he's kind of ignoring that first film and just adapting the book again, which is a Stephen King novel, because he wants to be much more faithful to the source material. I've never actually seen that first film, so I'm not sure.
It's a classic, like, there was a load of films, I'm old enough to just about remember this, there's a load of films that all starred Arnie as basically different versions of Arnie doing different stuff. One of them was Arnie, if he was in a futuristic game show, to the death.
Nice.
Where he just sort of said good quips to people, like basically won out. It was a good, like, fun one of those films. Did I dream this? I think there was a Colin Farrell remake version.
So what you're getting confused is that I was going to say that one of those movies with Arnie in is Total Recall, and Crouch is in the remake of Total Recall. So that's where you're getting mixed up there.
So this is a brand new version of that, Sam.
Yes, yeah, yeah, from Edgar Wright, which is his first film since Last Night in Soho a couple of years ago. So it should be great. And it's, yeah, as you mentioned, Roberto, he co-wrote this film with the writer of Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. So it's a big reunion for those two. So yeah, I'm sure you're looking forward to it a lot as well. Yeah, I think it's coming out this November. So it's a bit of a longer wait for that one. But yeah. I think it's going to be a good one for sure. Then I've got Guillermo del Toro's new version of Frankenstein. It's coming this year. Yeah, it's going to be a mega one. I think he's been trying to make it for 35 years, which is kind of all henna passion project.
The thing he's wanted to make the most in his life. And yeah, he's
got, oh, well, I think.
I think he's going to be terrific. Yeah, it kind of fits his aesthetic and his, like, yeah, his whole vibe of filming, making, I think. Perfectly. It's a match made in heaven, I think.
What's that? When's that one out, Sam? I'm going to definitely see that.
I don't think it's got a release date yet, as far as I can tell. I think Netflix are putting it out, but hopefully they're going to put it in cinemas for a little bit as well before they put it straight on the service. So we'll see. So at number two, I've got Mickey 17, which is the new film from Bong Joon-ho. It's his follow-up to Parasite, which won Best Picture a couple of years ago in 2020, I think. Yeah, and they kind of got a big ensemble cast. It's his highest budget film to date by quite a long way. And it's a big sci-fi epic with Robert Pattinson as an expendable employee of a big kind of galactic company, where he's put into various physically compromising roles. And every time he dies, they kind of generate a new body and upload his memories into it. And eventually, I think, he meets one of his duplicates. Yes,
yeah, really exciting new film. I think made terrific.
And this is the director who made Parasite, isn't it?
It's his first English language feature since Snowpiercer, which is like 12 years ago now, I think. So yeah, it's been a long while since he's made a non a film not in the Korean language. Yeah, so it's gonna be a big, huge blockbuster, and hopefully people will go and see it, because I think it's definitely gonna be worth a watch.
Excellent. And what's your number one, Sam?
Number one is the third Knives Out film, the brand new Knives Out. Yes, great. Called Wake Up Dead Man. And yeah, I love these films so much. I watch them all the time. I think they're gosh good fun. And yeah, so this will be another completely change of scenery and change of style and tone. And all I think we know about it is that it's following a group of priests. That's it. We know nothing else apart from, yeah, Daniel Craig is back as Benoit Blanc.
I was going to say, because Daniel Craig, it's not the main part, but he's kind of made himself the must-have in that franchise.
Yeah, he's the one constant, I suppose, and everything else is different. But yeah, I just love it. He's having such a good time in that role. He clearly loves it and doing the best accent of all time. Yeah, and it's got a really good cast as well. There's Josh O'Connor, Josh Brolin, Glenn Close, Mila Kunis, Jeremy Renner, Andrew Scott. Many, many more as well. Yeah, really, really correct cast. Yeah,
Andrew Scott's amazing,
isn't he? Yeah, so that's a really good, yeah, a good choice for a mystery, murder mystery, I think.
And also nice for Andrew Scott. That is full Hollywood from him.
It is mega Hollywood. Yeah,
yeah, good, good list, Sam. Good list. Do we know when the third Knives Out is coming?
That one also hasn't got a release date yet. I would imagine towards the end of the year, probably October, November. Up time.
Gotta watch this space.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, nice. Good list, Sam. Good list. So exciting stuff on there. Roberto, what are you looking forward to this year?
Yeah, so I'll go through a few of the ones Sam mentioned there, because there are a few on there that I also am really looking forward to. I'm also cautiously optimistic about Superman. I think James Gunn really knows how to like kind of do a comic book film that both respects the campiness that's kind of innate to comic books, but also he brings the heart, he brings the feels, as it were. I really enjoyed Guardians of the Galaxy 3 and the Suicide Squad recently. Yeah, he seems to have his finger on the pulse of what makes a really good comic book adaptation. So I'm cautiously optimistic about that. And then Mickey 17 is probably my most anticipated film of the year at the moment as well, just because I love Bong Joon-ho. I think it's funny you mentioned Snowpiercer, because I think I haven't seen much of Mickey 17 because I'm trying to avoid it as much as possible. Like, the trailer came on in the cinema, I was like, I don't want to see anything because we're going blind. But Snowpiercer is a really good example of how, like, a kind of, I guess, a more how would you say, a director who's kind of done more art house projects can really tackle like a kind of big blockbuster with sci-fi elements and bring the same kind of social commentary and the same kind of depth of character to that. I really enjoyed Snowpiercer, and hopefully Mickey 17 is the same. And I also want to mention that Steven Yeun is in this film, who's already an actor I really love, and he's playing a character called Berto, apparently. So yeah, there you go. It's an immediate lock. We gotta go see it.
Yeah,
under face. Steven Yeun's character makes it to the end. But and then The Running Man as well. I'm a big Edgar Wright fan. Yeah, I mentioned Scott Pilgrim earlier as well. But of course, the Cornetto trilogy is a classic as well. And yeah, Edgar Wright, I think he's proven as well that he's not just a great comedy director, he's a great action director with Scott Pilgrim and Baby Driver. So hopefully The Running Man also has kind of a good action vibe to it, kind of a sturdy action film. I think Glenn Powell's playing the main character. He's got that old school charisma, I think.
Yeah, like he's the Hollywood handsome, and he's kind of funny, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'll definitely be interested to see how Edgar Wright utilizes that. Or kind of keeping on action, actually. I'm gonna tentatively bring up Ballerina to be John Wick spin-off, starring Ana de Armas as an assassin brought up by Angelica Huston's character from John Wick 3 to be this. So from my understanding, in John Wick 3, you see these girls training as ballerinas in the kind of assassin's hideout. And from there, that kind of gives them the physical abilities to go and kill people, essentially. So I think Ana de Armas is one of these people, and we're going to follow her on her own journey. The John Wick series, I feel like the first one was such a surprise. The second one, people were like, is this going to be good? It was good. The third one came out, people love it. again, do we need a third one? We needed a third one. It was great. The fourth one came out. People were like, do we really need a fourth one? We really needed a fourth one. I'd love to John Wick 4. So if they keep that same streak going, I am looking forward to it. Only thing, it's not the same director as the previous four films. So will this be the one drop, or will they manage to retain the fantastic action? My opinion, if it's as good as that one Ana de Armas scene in No Time to Die, if you remember that, if it's like that quality through the whole film, I think I'll be happy.
The John Wick franchise is interesting, right? Because it first appeared as, you know, Keanu Reeves hadn't done anything for a little while, and he came back in this kind of over the top Jason Statham-y comic booky, like it was kind of a bit of a weird outlying, like, oh, that's kind of fun film. And it's become this monster franchise out of nowhere.
It really has, yeah. And it's completely changed. It's completely like changed the action landscape to the point where, you know, I don't know what happened in the 2000s, but people started shooting action terribly, maybe because they thought it wasn't a vital part of the films they were making. But since John Wick, we've had like films that would have otherwise had very minimal or not very good action scenes and now have very clear, they're very clearly shot, they're well choreographed. And that's all because John Wick kind of came in and showed us that action can be creative, it can be expressive. And The Raid as well, the Raid films, which I'll go on to next actually in a minute. These films kind of showed us that action could be very expressive and creative, and that's a good thing. And yeah, so that actually brings me on to my next film, which is Havoc, which I think should be releasing this year, which is directed by Gareth Evans, who did, I can see Sam smiling, I'm loving it. He did The Raid 1 and 2, which I don't know if anyone's... I think, Sam, you've seen The Raid 1?
Yeah.
Essentially, The Raid 1 and 2, just amazing martial arts slash action films, kind of buried in the seedy underworld of Jakarta in Indonesia. The funny thing is, it's directed by a Welsh dude called Gareth Evans. I actually saw recently a Q&A at the Prince Charles for his remaster of The Raid. But this film, Havoc, it stars Tom Hardy and Forrest Whitaker and Timothy Oliphant. And not much is known. I think it's mainly that Tom Hardy is a police officer kind of discovering corruption in the department and essentially going on a bit of a bash 'em up to sort it all out. I know Gareth Evans also did a series called Gangs of London, which I haven't seen.
This big, it's on, I've not seen it, but it's on Sky and it seems massive.
Yeah, it's, I think the third season's coming out. I don't know if Gareth Evans is doing that as well, but that's got a lot of praise, not only because of the action in it, but also because of the kind of the criminal drama going on. So if Havoc is kind of a feature film, kind of bringing us that drama as well as the amazing action scenes of the Raid, I'm going to be very excited. And we talked about Tom Hardy winning a martial arts championship in Milton Keynes.
That's right. Yeah,
I think he was training. I think he's training up. I think we're going to see him tossing blokes around.
Do you think that's what it was? Part of the kind of training regime for this one?
But possibly, who knows? Or maybe he's just good. And Gareth Evans was like, get him in. So yeah, I'm very much looking forward to that as well. And then just another few action bits. Mission Impossible 8 is coming out.
Oh yeah, the last one, the last ever one, they reckon.
How will Tom Cruise try and kill himself now, essentially?
God knows. Like, standing on a Boeing while dive off the center of the earth.
Tom Cruise dying is a Mission Impossible, isn't it? So
we'll see what happens, but that should be good fun. And then finally, to round it off, I don't know if this is set to come out this year, but Wildwood, the new Leica animation studios film, I think it should be. We saw a preview recently with a remaster of Coraline, but essentially, Leica are just an amazing animation studio, and this looks to be like them like a more serious endeavor for them. So I'm very much looking forward to that, just for the amazing animation and the kind of the heart their stories have. So yeah, that's kind of a quick look at my most anticipated, I'd say.
Good list, Roberto. So a lot coming up. Just quickly on the Mission Impossible stuff, I've quite enjoyed those. You know, big kind of nice popcorn films. I'll be quite excited to see Tom Cruise do some proper acting again. Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. So he's been in some films like Born the 4th of July, the one where he's in the cab with Jamie Foxx and he's an assassin. I forget the name of it.
That's...
Yeah, great film. You know, he's been in some really good Jerry Maguire. He's a really good actor. I know it sounds like obviously Tom Cruise, but he's a proper good actor. I feel like he's maybe been a bit, not wasting away because they're making gazillions of pounds and he's enjoyed it, I imagine. But he's just been doing these Mission Impossible films, become like this, the world's favourite stuntman for the last decade. I'll be interested to see him do some acting again.
I think so as well. Yeah, Tom Cruise has given some really great performances in like dramas and kind of more, I'd say, elevated action films like Collateral. So yeah, it would be interesting to see if he kind of pivots back to that after this. Yeah, an end of an era, I guess you could say. Definitely a lot to look forward to with that film.
Good stuff. And Nick, last but not least, what are you looking forward to this year?
I've got a couple. Most have been mentioned, really. Superman, looking forward to that. Just a quick one, just because I'm nerdy like that. David Corin's Sweat was in Twisters with Colin Powell.
Oh, yeah, of course he was.
And he found out he was getting the Rainy Superman on the set of Twisters. So they were all very, like, happy for him and, you know, started to train then. It's like, he gained, like, 200 pounds of muscle, I swear. So that's already incredible. I look forward to that because of the sort of... I'm into the whole rehash of the DC universe. James Gunn's involved and I enjoyed his Guardians films. And I enjoyed even the stuff before that. Like, I've recently been playing a game called Lollipop Chainsaw that he was involved in.
Yeah. So I have some means to play that as well.
So I like his stuff. But also, on the flip side, with Marvel, so they've got 3 films coming out but this year, which is Captain America 4 and Thunderbolts. But the most I'm looking forward to there is Fantastic Four. So that's a reboot of that team. You've got Pedro Pascal playing Mr. Fantastic, Vanessa Kirby as the Invisible Woman, Ebon Bacharach as the Thing, and then lastly, Joseph Quinn, who we just saw in Gladiator 2 as the Human Torch. I think, I mean, I like Marvel anyway, but just this one here, they're bringing it back to that sort of 60s space age aesthetic, you know, they've got like robots running around the Baxter Building and things like that. It's very like campy summer rocket camp sort of vibes that I get from that, and I enjoy that. Like, I'm looking forward to that just because I'm a Marvel fan as well. But recently coming up, like the closest upcoming movie that I'm looking forward to is a film called Hard Truths by Mike Lee. Yeah. And it's starring Marianne Jean-Baptiste, who's like an UK legend. And it's just sort of like a surrealist look on British life, but also like hard hitting. I mean, I really not looked much into it, but the trailer really sold me. And it was just that like jokey, but no, you know, this is serious, right? Like she's really like a pessimistic woman just living through her life. And all these people are like gathering around her to make her feel like more positive, but she's just really like bluntly putting it out there. And if you know Mike Lee movies as well, they don't really tend to brush under the rug or anything like that. They really will deliver it to you like right in front of your camera. So that's one I'm looking forward to a lot. That's coming up quite soon. I think we might have that on as well at the Odyssey in February. So that's pretty soon. I've got a couple of things though that you haven't mentioned. 28 Years Later, quite looking forward to that. I love 28 Days Later. I would say 28 Weeks I'm not the hugest fan of, but this is the third one, obviously, and Danny Boyle is coming back to direct after those two. And then I'm not sure what his latest movie last movie was. I think it was a documentary, but I do love a lot of his other movies, like Slumdog Millionaire is actually one of my favorites, like, of all time, possibly, just because I think it's a really like beautifully made film. So I've been looking forward to that a lot. And Megan 2.0. Obviously, did you see the first one, Neil? Have you seen?
Yeah, this is this terrifying doll. Yes, I have seen it and I found it terrifying.
Because it is just a bunch of fun. Like, I really enjoyed myself watching that film in the cinema. And obviously, they brought it back. Enough people did as well to bring it back for a second one.
And if it's Blumhouse as well, Blumhouse just know how to really like just dig under those, like, I don't know, like they know how to make you laugh, but they know how to make you scream as well, like at the same time. And I think Megan was like a big combination of both of those things there. I've got to say, probably one of the Odyssey's most anticipated movies on this year is probably Downton Abbey 3. I'll be looking forward to being really busy around that time of the year when that comes out.
Oh, yeah.
And also just the last one, just in all seriousness as well, for me, Wicked for Good, The Wicked 2. Like, I love Wicked this year, and I really look forward to part 2 as well coming out next year. Or the, I think it's November, like later on the year.
I was going to ask, actually. Yeah, so that is definitely coming out this year, because...
Yeah. Yeah, I think they filmed it back-to-back, so they've got it. They're probably...
Shoots, Odyssey, yeah.
Reshoots, maybe, if anything, but yeah.
Awesome, yeah, because, you know, I mean, I'm sure I don't need to tell you guys, but, like, Wicked Fever has swept the Odyssey. Like, people who I wouldn't have expected to...
Yeah.
...be very passionate about the film are hitting it with 5 stars.
Camilla.
You know, I really enjoyed it as well. I liked some of the Wizard of Oz stuff. I didn't know if I was going to fully like enjoy Wicked just based on the trailers. But I got swept up in it. It's just a great story, and the songbook that they wrote for that play, it slaps. So going a bit informal there, but yeah, no, I'm looking forward to that as well.
Yeah, nice. Okay, some good stuff coming up. So Wicked 2 is going to be massive, obviously, because Wicked 1, I guess it will be now, has just been absolutely everywhere all the time. Odyssey packed, like all cinemas packed, the stars of it on absolutely everything, everywhere. So yeah, I imagine more of the same.
Golden Globe. It won a Golden Globe for best like audience award. It won an audience award.
Oh, like a voted one kind of thing.
I think, I'm not sure if it was voted or publicly voted, but it won an award for sort of just essentially creating an atmosphere, like a movie making, I don't know, empire, I suppose.
Oh yeah, nice. And also, I get that, because do you remember a few years ago they were talking about after COVID, the kind of the death of cinema sort of thing. And then you had the mad but sort of intriguing Barbenheimer thing, where actually the public spoke and said, we still want to go to the cinema. And then you've got films like Wicked are really important, because they're dragging everybody back to cinema. That was a full-on cinema release, wasn't it? All right, good stuff, lads. Lots to look forward to in 2025. And for us involved in this podcast, we'll be pleased to know that we're coming up for the final part of what has been a very laborious podcast recording. So if everybody's tech holds solid for the next 6 minutes or so, we'll come back for part 3. Welcome back to part 3 of the Podyssey. Thank you for sticking with us this far. Sorry for some of the technical issues we've had today. We've just got a bit of time left to look forward to what's coming up at the Odyssey in the next few weeks, in January and the early Feb. So, guys, what have you got coming up at the cinema for everyone?
We've got Rumours coming up, which is a film, a bit unknown, to be fair. I didn't actually know about it until a couple of weeks ago. It's the new film from this guy, Joshua Oppenheimer, who's a documentary filmmaker. He's made some incredible, extremely intense documentaries. One of them's The Act of Killing, which is one of the best films I've ever seen, probably. It's really, intense examination of genocide. But this film is rather different from that. This film is about leaders of the G7 who are stranded in the German wilderness, and kind of mysterious things start to occur while they're there. It's got really good cast on it as well. We're showing it just the once on Sunday the 19th in the evening. I definitely recommend coming to see it. I think that's great. I'm definitely gonna be there for it. And towards the end of the month, we've got the new Robert Eggers film adaptation of Nosferatu, the big German classic. So that is a mega new film.
I've heard mixed things about this.
I loved it. I saw it the other day, the BFI on IMAX in their big, really big screen. I thought it was terrific. It's interesting in that the film it's based on is like the father of all modern horror cinema. Whereas this one, I think it, I wouldn't say it was especially scary, and I don't know if it's trying to be particularly scary. I'd say it's more just a really entertaining film. It's just a really good, fun thing to watch. Because I think it's, I think it maybe doesn't want to try and outdo something that can't be outdone. So it's just having a lot of fun with itself, and has a really good tone that is very, at times, like it's really oppressive and intense and kind of creepy. But a lot of the time as well, it's quite playful and having fun with itself and kind of subaware. Yeah, it's terrific. It's got a really good cast. Lily Rose.
And for something that will make a lot of our listeners feel quite old, this has got Johnny Depp's grown-up daughter in it. Is that right?
Indeed, yes. Yeah. This is, I don't know if this is, I think this is the first like major role I've seen her in, but she's in a film anyway. She's definitely been in other things.
In that really bad Kevin Smith movie, but I can't remember the name of it.
Yes, she was. I can't remember what that's called.
With his daughter.
Yes, with Kevin Smith's daughter, yeah. It came, yeah, she's come a long way from that, I think. This is a, this is actually a amazing performance from her. It's really, because she's being possessed, shall we say, by Nosferatu quite regularly, and it's a really full-bodied performance. She is like, she puts everything into it. It's really something to see.
I watched it last night, and there were points where I was like, is this special effects, or is she actually just doing this? I was very impressed. I'd heard things. I was like, okay, let's see what this is, and I was left very impressed. Yeah,
I also love the phrase possessed quite regularly.
That is true. That is like, it's you know, yeah. I don't want to say too much about the film, but I guess that plays into a lot of like the kind of the themes of the film. But it's a good I really enjoyed it as well.
Did you find it scary?
No, I wouldn't say I was like scared. I would say especially the scenes in which we are kind of in Nosferatu's domain. I would say some of the way in which that is all directed is so like, I was literally like I was gripping my seat.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was like because I was enjoying how creative it all was, or maybe I was like genuinely like, ah, what's going on? But you know, very, he kind of plays around with kind of, it's not explicit, but the way Nosferatu kind of is able to manipulate things is very, it's just done really well. I do recommend it as well.
Good stuff. Anything else that people should be looking out for?
I will say I watched a film that kind of was just as how would you say dramatic and kind of put me in a different mindset in the same way Nosferatu did, kind of showed me the darkness of humanity in a different way. And that was Sonic the Hedgehog 3, which I watched a lot.
Oh God, this looks bad. I can't. Obviously, go and see it, The Odyssey. You'll enjoy it, but my goodness, it looks bad.
I'll say this: I was not a fan of the first two Sonic films, and maybe it was literally because this film opens with like a few notes from one of the songs from the games. But I want it. Here's one thing they do really well, and that is this new character they introduce. Speaking of John Wick, Shadow the Hedgehog, played by Keanu Reeves. They really like play his arc like very dramatically, and it really works. It kind of you know, anytime Shadow the Hedgehog is on screen, the film's very very engaging. So maybe that's just because I played a lot of Shadow the Hedgehog in 2005, and my brain chemistry just flipped. But I do think, yeah, we're showing that Saturday 26th January at 1 PM. If anything, it's a great family film. I recommend it for that.
I want to put a quick shout out for We Live in Time as well. The new Andrew Garfield, Florence Pugh, romantic comedy / tearjerker. That starts on the 17th of January, so a week from now if I'm recording. I really want to check this one out. It's just because also it just seems like a fresher spin on the romantic comedy. I think it's like a non-linear sort of way of telling the story where it jumps in between events in their relationship rather than just tell you in a straight, you know, linear way, which I think is quite interesting. And I'm really interested in Andrew Garfield. Like, I think he's a great actor, a great guy.
as well, so that always just brings me to want to watch it as well, to be honest. Maria with Angelina Jolie. I've seen both. I think I probably butcher his name right here, but Pablo Larraín.
That's it.
And he directed Spencer, and he also directed one before that as well. But I was a big fan of Spencer, which is that movie with Christian Stewart, who plays Princess Diana. And that was just a really like melancholy, like beautiful sort of way of just like presenting these tragic, like traumatic lives. And I know that's quite, sounds pretty sad, but it's quite gothic actually, and it's quite romantic in its way of telling like these sort of downhill struggles like that these people go through. Like, so of course with the Spencer movie, it was sort of Princess Diana and her like analysis and relationship we have with the royal family versus actually looking after her children. And then in this one, it's sort of like, so it's about Maria Callas, who is an opera singer, very popular opera singer, and sort of her downfall with fame and popularity, how she didn't really want that, but it was just, you know, really sort of kept coming towards her, and how that might have sort of buried her under quite a mountain of, like, you know, struggle, essentially. So that's one to look out for, essentially. We got that on a few times. I think our first one is on the 31st, I believe. So the last day of this this month here. There's something to look out for.
So, chaps, we've limped through to the end of this. Again, apologies to listeners that this is, might have sounded a bit disjointed. We'll be back in the studio as normal from next month to record the Podyssey. But it's time to say goodbye. I think we should probably attempt to do it as Daniel Craig from the Knives Out film. So, Roberto, I'm looking at you, top of the screen. You can go first.
All right, hold on. I can do this.
You can do this. I believe in you.
Thank you for listening to the Podyssey.
Okay. I'm trying to imagine that.
Thank you for listening to the Podyssey.
That went Forrest Gump for a bit.
Gorilla slash Lost Ross.
Or the Dolmio puppets.
That was a Brit dream.
Go on, Nick.
Okay. I do declare, thank you for listening to the Podyssey.
Very good. Thanks, everybody, for listening to the Podyssey. Sorry for all the technical issues today. All right, everybody, good work. And apologies to listeners and apologies to you three for all the challenges. We'll be back in the studio next month. Let's get this one done. Let's pretend it never happened. And nice to see you all. And we'll be back with you in February. Thanks, chaps. Thanks for listening. If you want to drop us a line here at the Podyssey, you can email me at neil.rodger@mix926.com with your thoughts on the show, your views on the films we've talked about, and if you're feeling brave, you could do our next intro or set our next final challenge. You can find out all about what's on at the Odyssey or what's going on with Mix 92.6 FM by checking out the websites and searching them on all the socials, where they can both be found.